What do you think are some of the skills, especially as leaders, that we should be really working on right now?
As a leader now, I am leading 4 separate generations of individuals. Each generation has its own passion for what it is that they would like to get out of the role that they have. I'm constantly looking at how do I engage with, how do I work with, and how do I inspire these individuals. My mother had to live off of a pension, and she struggled from month to month on a pension when my father passed away. And it frightened me so much to sit back going, okay, no, we need to take control of this. What is this going to look like? Because I'd never want to be in that situation.
Advice for a female listening to this right now that knows she's not getting paid her worth in the business that she's working with, what steps could she take to really start speaking up more and asking for what she deserves? Welcome back to the Career Confidence Podcast. This is now the 3rd time you've been on. And so for those listening that don't know Mary Beth, I'm actually going to tag the previous podcast I did with her and also our incredible event that you were also on the panel for as well. So I feel like I know you really well. I really respect you. You have been an inspiration in my life because every time I click on LinkedIn, you're doing something new and you're constantly innovating, constantly striving to be the best version of you. And I absolutely love that. So can you get us up to speed? What's been going on in your world? And I'm really excited to talk about the new book. So over to you, Mary Beth. Get us up to speed since last time you were on the podcast.
Wow. So last time, I think it was with When Now Means Now, which was my book that I launched.
Yes.
Last year, which was around that career progression piece. So in the background, Georgie, I've been working with a colleague on an organizational change and transformation book, and a book that we hope will revolutionize organizations across the globe. And that's been really my primary focus. I've had a shift in roles. So I moved into the not-for-profit sector. For those of you that know me, you'll know that I am absolutely passionate about getting more women into STEM. And so I went across to a not-for-profit, which is Vic ICT for Women, and I'm their CEO. And I'm really passionate about that piece as well.
So let's dive into the book now. So it's 10X Generation is the business, obviously, that you've launched with Addy, and you've written the book together, Not Another Digital Transformation. Great titles. I think a lot of people would go, oh, a roll eye. Yep, want to read that. So talk to me, who is this book for? And what inspired you both to come together and write this?
So as I said before, this book is for anybody that is impacted by a digital transformation. I have been through 8 digital transformations in my career. Now, I'd like to preface that by saying that this is not, when we talk about digital transformation in the 10X generation state, we're not talking about a technology uplift. A technology uplift is something that's necessary for all organizations. Technology needs to be current. And so this is not what we're talking about when we talk about a digital transformation. What we're talking about is when an organization is underperforming and the IT function is considered to be to blame. The IT function doesn't do what it needs to do. It's not as rapid as it needs to be. We need to bring in external consultants in to fix the IT function. But what we're actually saying is the problem may not necessarily be in that IT function. The problem may be in the silos that have been created within your organization, maybe within the bloat that you've created in your organization. And what we do see is when you have a digital transformation, that's when a lot of bloat takes place. Human capital, we need to throw more people at it. If we throw more people at it, it will solve the problem. But we're saying, no, stop, pause. We think that there is a way of achieving the benefits that you want, and to go back to your the potential grassroots of a startup mentality in an enterprise or a small to medium organization. It is entirely possible by changing your structure and looking at how you communicate across your organization. And we talk about the different tiers within the organization itself. Now, the next part of your question, the why, or how did we come about this? Addy and I were working together, and at an organization, and we were leaving a particular meeting. And I remember the day, it was midweek, and we walked out of this meeting and was like, how could the rest of the business not actually understand what it is that we're talking about here? And it felt like there was a massive disconnect between what we in the IT function were recommending to what the rest of the business had heard. And we went into a meeting room and we basically put our hands in our heads and went, oh my God, I just don't understand how we can have such a massive disconnect. And knowing that that organization had gone from startup to scaler and had already gotten itself into that silo bloat situation and it hadn't even grown that much, we sat back and we thought, I think we've got a better way, a different way of approaching this. And so we sat down and we started writing the book.
Well, I'd love to dive into that approach now, because I'm sure there are people listening to this podcast that work for big businesses or any sort of business that also want to offer as much value to that business because they know that that's what's going to get them noticed, it's what's going to get them promoted, and it's also what is going to help them accelerate in their careers. What are the kind of the steps that they're going to be able to learn and then be able to apply to their jobs that's going to help the business in general?
Great question. We call it the wheel of chaos. If you are stuck in this wheel of chaos, let me explain what the wheel of chaos is. Organization is underperforming. C-suiters bring in consultants because they're underperforming and they can't quite work out why. Consultants suggest a digital transformation. Go into a digital transformation. Consultants then say, yes, we've delivered on this digital transformation whilst only focusing on the IT function. Consultants leave. IT function goes back to the previous way of working because really the problem wasn't just necessarily in the IT function at all. It was with the silos that were created across every other department. IT function moves back to its old ways of working. Organization still isn't performing the way it needed to perform. C-suiter who brought the consultants in either will move off and go to something else, and then a new C-suiter will come in and they'll bring in consultants who'll have a look and say, well, the problem's obviously with your IT function, and kick off another digital transformation and so on and so forth. And then it just goes on and it's that wheel of chaos. And that's really what we see. We've decided to write the book as like a stage play. So you have three main acts, and within each act you have 12 scenes, which is basically a scenario. So you have 36 separate scenarios that I would challenge anybody to read this book who hasn't lived through at least 80% of the scenarios that we talk about in the book. But we talk about each of these scenarios. And then at the end of the scenario, we talk about what you would need to do to reach the 10X generation state. 10X generation state is about removing silos. It is about creating visibility. It is taking the individual, the department, and all departments and the strategic layer on the same journey, providing them with visibility across the organization, a clear line of sight to the organization's strategic goals, whether they are the strategic goals within the operational state, so that lower tier, the tactical state, or the strategic state.
Well, I'm sure that there's a lot of people listening to this that are going to be very intrigued and definitely will, when the book comes out, definitely go and buy and learn lots from it. I think that's definitely a very needed book right now in the marketplace, especially, like I said, with the pace of change and the amount of, I guess, consultancies, like you say, that are brought in to, you know, come and literally just come and say the same thing over and over again. Oh, we need to change the IT function. We need to do this, we need to do this, do this. And then they leave and everything goes back to the way it was before. So I totally get it. And I've worked in tech recruitment now for the last 10 years, and I've definitely seen it happen with a lot of my clients as well. So really interesting concepts. And I think that everyone who buys the book obviously will get a lot from it. But I want to talk now about like the whole sort of leadership piece, because there's a lot of talk around the skills of the future and what are the skill gaps and what are people going to need to learn and continue to sort of evolve as the world does change at such a rapid pace. So being a leader yourself, being the current CEO at Vic ICT for Women, what do you think are some of the skills, especially as leaders, that we should be really working on right now?
I am a firm believer that people are the center of everything that we do in the 10X generation and not another digital transformation. It is very people-centric because people are what is the lifeblood of every organization. What skills do you need as a leader going forward? As a leader now, I am leading four separate generations of individuals. Each generation has its own passion for what it is that they would like to get out of the role that they have. They are looking for different things in their role. A millennial is looking for something different to a Gen X, to a boomer. We still have people that are the older, you know, but you don't have to retire at 65. And I'm one of those people. Why would you? You know, you don't use it, you lose it. So why would you want to? I might not want to put in, you know, 80-hour weeks, but you want to keep doing things that are important to you and that keep your mind active. But as a leader, I'm constantly looking at how do I engage with, how do I work with, and how do I inspire these individuals at different levels, that want different things from their career. A lot of the individuals that I work with now, they don't want to be in the same role or the same company, mind you, for the next 30 years. That's changed. And you do have some people that want to stay in the same company for the next 10, 15 years, and that's what they want. But then you've got others that it's, I want progression and I want to move on really rapidly. So how do I deal with that? Because part of my role as a leader is to retain, because retention is one of the most expensive things. We don't retain our staff. It's very expensive to backfill and retrain and do those sorts of things. So as a leader, that's what I'm looking at. And so what I am trying to do with my more junior leaders is to help instill that in them. Because suddenly you might go into a leadership role and maybe you're 25, 30 years old and you're leading people that are in their 60s. It's the reverse for you. So what do you need to do there and how do you learn that? So those are the learnings and having very clear mentorship, certainly in the leadership space. You know my thinking around coach, mentor, sponsor. So I'm talking about that piece in the middle, the mentor, that person that you can really bounce ideas off of and really get and gain a true understanding of different levels that you're dealing with now. And that to me, and I'm not going to talk technology, you know, we could talk AI, we could talk data, we could talk all of those sorts of things. They're going to come and they're going to go. They will change the landscape of certain things. What will never change is it's going to be people at the center of it all, and being able to deal and lead them is really important. And knowing what really floats the boat of the individual is going to be very important for leaders going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's that those softer skills, they're becoming more critical skills as we move into this next generation as well. But you make some really valid points there, Mary Beth. And one thing that I'm reflecting on a lot myself, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is the whole change in the workforce. We've obviously got a lot of hybrid ways of working, which is fantastic. And I'm a massive advocate for hybrid ways of working. The one thing that I always come back to when I reflect on my earlier days in my career was the amount of, I guess, time with the senior people in the business. And I learned so much just by watching, by listening, by being around these senior women and men. I guess where I'm sort of like having question marks on is we've got all this wisdom over here of these senior leaders, and then we have people new to the workforce. I'd love to get like your opinion now, because there is a lot going on in the marketplace between, you know, should we come back in office 3 days a week, 4 days a week, full time? But where do you sit with the whole piece around the junior people that are new to the workforce and the seniors? What's your thoughts on how we can sort of bridge that sort of gap with wisdom, new people over here? And how does that work in a new sort of hybrid way of working?
Hybrid makes it really hard, but not impossible. Mm. So the thing that I do as a senior leader, and you can ask my previous team at PointsBet, I had 145 people, and every quarter I actually made time with every single individual, regardless of where they sat, whether they were in the most junior or the most senior. I would mentor my seniors because I wanted them to work with their juniors in the same way. But I would meet with every single individual and have conversations and chats and help them through some of the challenges that they may have. Now, that's a lot of my time, and it's hard if you are running, you know, maybe you're running an organization that's, you know, got 60,000 people. It's not necessarily possible. But ensuring that each of your tiers down and below have the same level of skill, and that you are providing that your skills to the next layer, enforcing that to the next layer, then they will still get all of the great stuff from the senior leader, not necessarily be in the same room as them. It's very challenging when it's hybrid if you're not in the office at all. So if you are solely working remotely, then we need to find different mechanisms with which to be able to impart that knowledge. I used to run webinars. I run webinars now. You know, I do an Ask the CEO, and I will put that up and ask and invite people to ask me questions. And I know a lot of other C-suiters do the same sort of thing. And that if you're not really comfortable asking a question in an open forum, then having it as a closed questioning so that the question can be answered and that everyone gets an understanding of that. These are the sort of mechanisms that we started to employ when we were working fully remote with COVID. And now that COVID is over, why have we forgotten those? They were great tools, so we needed them then. So let's just use them now. There's been a lot of things I've been reading on LinkedIn and CEOs of big organizations saying that if you don't come into the office, then you don't have passion for the organization. And I don't agree with that. I believe if I lead people and they know exactly what's expected of them, they know exactly what should be, how they should perform, all those sorts of things. They don't necessarily have to be in the office all the time. Coming into the office, yes, you get that connection. Makes it very hard if you're fully remote. But we worked it out for 2 years with COVID, so we shouldn't be forgetting those lessons. They were great lessons. Let's not just throw the baby out with the bathwater because now, well, we've got all this space, we want to have people back in the office. Let's think about what worked, what didn't work during COVID, and then let's explore that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's interesting how we've gone from one extreme and now maybe we're trying to sort of get back to the other. And I like to think there's this balance in the middle where hybrid could work really, really well for everybody. But like you just said then, it's giving people the like a reason to come back into the office. And I think that whole mentorship piece, learning off seniors, is really important. But I also love the solution you came up with the webinars, like what worked during COVID and why have we stopped that if it was working so well? So really, really good advice for anyone who's, because like, again, it's just a question that comes up all the time with my clients. What are the companies doing? You know, how can we get people back into the office? And it's just, it keeps on coming up. So it's just always interested to get, you know, senior leaders and CEOs advice on this very topic. But
I'm of the opinion that for me, if I go into a new role, if it's my current role is fully remote, I really like in office. But I've always had a hybrid working model. I was always either a 4-1 or a 3-2 split because I needed the 1 or 2 days to actually get some work done and get some thinking space. But I also liked to be in the office because I like the interconnection. As a senior leader, I would go into an office, you know, when I first started a role, I'd be in the office every single day for at least the first 3 months because I can't make connections with individuals that I would want to make. But that's because I'm a senior leader. I wouldn't expect somebody that were perhaps more of a junior staff member to come in every single day. It's not that it's just come in, meet, greet, do that maybe in the first little while so that you get to know the individuals. But then hybrid, I've never had a problem with hybrid. I used to say to my team before COVID, I say, why don't you work from home today? And they'd be like, oh, no, I need to be in the office. And I'm like, why? If you can get something done and you take a day at home to do it, I trust you. And I think that's what it comes down to, is that trust. Explain exactly what's needed and manage people or lead people and then manage the performance based on the output. And I absolutely believe that every individual wants to come and do a good day's job. They just need to know what it is that you want from them, and then they'll be able to perform that.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. Absolutely agree. We're definitely on the same page there. Manage expectations, set expectations, and have trust. It sounds so simple, but unfortunately it's not, it doesn't seem to be the way in some organizations, which is a shame, but trust is absolutely essential. And I think once people feel like they've been given trust, they want to do a good job. Like you said, like most of the career professionals that I work with and I've met, they want to do a fantastic job. So it's just allowing your people to work where they work best, I guess, as well. But look, I would love to now as well, like dive into your new role. It's a really exciting role, and I can't think of anybody else to step into this role and create the amount of change that you're going to create, I'm sure. So you're the current CEO of Vic ICT for Women, which is, yeah, congratulations, huge role. And I'm sure you're absolutely loving it because it aligns so beautifully with your passion. So talk to me about that role. What have you been brought in to do? What do you want to achieve? And I'd also love to know a little bit more about the organization as well.
For Vic ICT for Women, we focus on a woman's career progression from primary school and high school all the way through to, let's just say, executive and beyond. So what we have our five main programs that we run. The first program is Go Girl, Go for IT. It's actually our year to run the full Go Girl program this year. We get over 2,000 female students, grades 5 through to year 12, come to Deakin University in Burwood, and they come for the day, and they go through, we have a trade show, we have keynotes, we have workshops, the whole gambit to reignite a love of STEM. So science, technology, engineering, and maths. And we all know that sort of generally a lot of those subjects will all lead eventually into technology. So we have a very strong technology slant to it, but it really does focus on STEM. Then we have our Grad Girls program. Our Grad Girls program is for young women who are just about to graduate from university or maybe in the second to last year. And we run programs throughout the year. It's an annual program where these students will go into different workplaces. And what we're doing is we're flipping that whole idea of internship on its head. We're actually taking these young women through different organizations so that they can get an understanding of where they might like to work, of the organizations that they might like to contribute to. Then to focus on and help with women that are already in the workplace but don't necessarily like to network in the standard IT frame of networking, which is very, very male-dominated. We run the Importance of Women, which is our networking program. We run around 10 sessions or 10 conferences every year. I say conference, it's really, we have a keynote and it's a lovely interactive environment that women and men are invited to, but we do focus on empowerment of women. There is a very scary statistic at the moment of women between the ages of 55 and 65 finding themselves homeless and having to move back into share house accommodation, those sorts of things. And what we're really trying to do with Importance of Women this year is focus on wealth creation, understanding your superannuation, understanding imposter syndrome, how to really propel your career, really to be able to be empowered in yourself. And then we have our What's Hot in Technology program. We run 3 events. We actually have an event coming up this Wednesday night, which I'm really excited about because we're talking about sustainable technology and cloud services, cloud in relation to sustainability. Because we do know that the government are changing the sustainability and the ESG reporting required of many corporates, and that will come in on the 1st of July. So if your organization doesn't know what that is, you should come along to our event or at least get yourself known and know what's going on with that. And then finally, we have Mentor She. Mentor She is also our annual mentoring program where we offer mentoring to women. We have C-suiters. I'm a mentor with the Mentor She program, and it's $199 for the year now. I don't know about you, but it costs a lot more to get a C-suite mentor as far as I'm concerned. So to join that program is amazing. So we have the five programs, and that's what we do. We're there to support women. We are fully sponsorship funded. We don't get funded by the Victorian government. So just because we've got Vic in the title doesn't mean we're actually funded by the Victorian government. It is fully sponsorship funded and it is fully volunteer led. So I work with the most amazing cohort of women and men who absolutely believe that we need to shift the dial on diversity. And we really do focus on the DEIB. So diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging within the Vic ICT for women under that umbrella. And my goal is to just keep growing the organization, look at new programs, the possibility of new programs, what that might look like, and just to ensure that we have the right number of volunteers that we need to run our programs, that we have the right sponsorship.
Wow, that's quite the organization and one that's really needed. And, you know, hopefully soon the government does start to pay attention to it. And who knows, you might even get the government on board. I hope so, because like I just said then, with those stats of like the homeless women of 55 to 65, that is so scary. And look, I look at my mum, she's 64 now, and she is of the generation where she did take a large chunk of time off to raise my brother and I, and she doesn't have a large pension. So now she's 64. My parents are separated and she's still having to work because she hasn't got enough money in her pension to basically, you know, sustain her lifestyle. And I was thinking about this the other day and I was like, this is just not okay. Like, you know, society is set up so poorly. And how long have we got, right? But, you know, people now, women my age, I'm 36, I don't have children. Now, that is quite intentional because it's expensive. And also, I don't have any help. My parents are all in the UK. So I know that in order to run my business and do everything I want to do, daycare would be my only option. Well, daycare's over $1,000 a month. How, what's the incentive for women now to actually have children, keep their career, and also make sure that they've got enough money put away in superannuation or a pension fund to sustain themselves when they're older? Like, it's a really, really big issue. So I love the fact that you are educating women on wealth generation and how they can make sure that they don't get to 50 and go, oh, I've just got nothing to live on from now on. It's a real problem, Mary Beth, and I don't have the answer to it, but it's definitely a scary thought that that's where most of the homeless is coming from, that generation of women. So I love the fact that you're addressing this. And I did obviously, well, I was pretty shocked when the recent stats came out about the gender pay gap.
The WGEA report. I was at a different conference speaking on that, and yeah, it's highlighting those organisations that just haven't focused on it. Hasn't been a focus point. But I was speaking with a colleague who was at a different event, and they had a speaker there from the UN. And she was suggesting that it's going to take 160 years before women's wages get up to parity. And I just thought, wow, I really don't have that long to wait. But, you know, going back to what you were saying before about pensions, you know, it's entirely possible that people of your age are not going to have a pension to fall back on. Mm-hmm. So your superannuation is the most important thing. And if you don't actually understand superannuation, there are a lot of people, and not just say women, but a lot of people that are just afraid of finances, afraid of that. And what I say is go do a basic finance course. Regardless of where you are in your career, what you're doing in your career, understand what your finances are, understand the makeup of your superannuation. What does that look like? Understand what your options are and do it now. What is the saying that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago? If not, then today. It's the same idea. Learn about things now. Understand credit. Understand your credit rating. credit rating here in Australia and how you get it is very different to how you'd get it in the UK, very different to how you get it in the US. So whoever's listening to this on this on your podcast, understand those nuances of your region where you live, but think about what you would like your future to look like. It really saddens me when I see, you know, women that have worked all of their lives and now they're in a situation that your mother is in, where she may never be able to retire. Or if she does retire, it's going to be on a very, very limited income. My mother had, through bad decisions my parents made, she had to live off of a pension and she struggled from month to month on a pension when my father passed away. And it frightened me so much to sit back going, okay, no, we need to take control of this. What is this going to look like? Because I'd never want to be in that situation. But a lot of people out there need to know that they need to take control of this. As soon as you start working, start thinking about that. I know that the future seems like it's a long way away, but it's not that long away. It goes really fast. And if you're not paying attention, things can slip past.
Absolutely. And the world's not getting any cheaper as well. So it is making sure that, you know, you do. And look, I'm actually really grateful for my upbringing because I did watch my mum raise me and she wasn't necessarily somebody that was the breadwinner, right? It was my dad. And I remember thinking from a young age as a young girl that I always wanted to have my own money. I always wanted to be able to take care of me. That was something that ever since I can remember, they were my thoughts. So I'm now I've sat myself down. I've sat with financial investors. I understand wealth. I understand credit. I understand all of these things. And I've taught myself because it's something that was really, really important to me. And it is just something that I don't think is discussed enough. Like, we're so hesitant to talk about money, but actually we do need to speak about it and we need to make sure, especially women, like, this is why there's a gap, because we do need to speak up. We do need to say, do you know what? I want to be paid more. And I was having a conversation with my girlfriend the other day and she was really fired up about all the stats. And I was like, what are you going to do about it? Knowing these stats, what are you now going to do about it? And she's like, you're right. I'm going to book a meeting with my boss right now and I'm going to have a conversation. She said, because I know that there's people in the business that I'm working with right now who are men that are more than me and are doing the same job as me. And I was like, right, good. So let's sort of talk about this now, because Mary Beth, you are somebody that is, you know your worth. You're a confident woman, right? And speaking up perhaps comes quite naturally to you. And you would have worked on that, I'm sure. But advice for a female listening to this right now that knows she's not getting paid her worth in the business that she's working with, what steps could she take to really start speaking up more and asking for what she deserves?
I always account, when I talk about and negotiate salary and increases, I always bring it back to tangible facts of what I've delivered and the value that I bring. And for any woman listening to this now, know that. Just know your facts. Understand the value, what you bring to the organization, and have that ready when you have the conversation. And don't stop asking. Because I know of, and then a lot of anecdotes of women that I know who will ask, they'll go in and they'll speak to their boss and they'll ask, they'll say, I would like a pay rise and this is why, X, Y, and Z. And the boss will say, yep, I'll look at that. And then they expect that that will then be addressed. But you know what? Your boss, whether your boss is male or female, mind you, are very, very busy. So the old adage, a squeaky wheel gets the oil, go back in. If you don't hear anything back within the next couple of weeks, go back in. Go back in and see your boss and say, hey, that conversation that we've had, facts, here they are. I want to talk to you about pay rise. Now, there may be things that your boss cannot do, but let me explain something to you that's really very simple. You're in recruitment. Georgie, you will know this. If I as a leader lose an employee, it's going to cost me a certain amount of money to replace that person. It's going to cost me in lost productivity. It's going to cost me in the interviewing and lost productivity on the individuals that need to interview that person. And then that person coming up to speed within their organization might take them 3 to 6 months to get up to speed. That is all a cost. You walking out of your organization and finding somewhere else that's going to pay you, it's actually going to be a very big impact on your organization. Now, you don't need to threaten. It's not about threatening, but it's about a boss will know these numbers. Now, if you're not serious about really wanting a pay increase, then don't bother going in and speaking to them. Go in, have your facts, and then don't ease up until you get what it is that you want. And there we are, negotiation. So with any good negotiation, you might go in a bit higher than you really want, and then you might come down a little bit, but you'll negotiate. But don't stop at the ask, the first ask. You need to ask again and ask again, because your male counterparts are doing it. They're absolutely doing it because they understand their worth and they will actually push for that. And a lot of you are out there listening to this going, oh, but money doesn't drive me. Do you want to be that 55 to 65-year-old statistic? I think not. So get what you're worth. And it's not about if you love the organization and they love you, then have the conversation now.
That's really powerful advice. And I think people listening to this now will be like, yep, I'm definitely going to do that, because you make some really valid points. It's so costly when companies lose their employees. They, like you said, it's because they've got to go back up to market, potentially go and pay a recruiter fee. And, you know, we're not cheap. We know that. But, you know, there's a reason why people come to us, because it's hard to find good talent, right? So people pay a premium to have good talent. So on that note, right? So let's just say there's a business right now, and this all comes back to what you're speaking about before, the people element and that whole retention piece, right? Because I can imagine that as part of this whole digital transformation piece and 10X generation, organizations also, you know, you mentioned about stopping the bloat, but we also want to make sure that we keep our key people. So what can organizations do to keep hold of and retain their top performers and just people in general? Like anything that you've seen work well when it comes to company culture, especially?
If in a company, we all know what the company is striving to achieve and we're all taken on that same strategic journey and we buy into that strategic journey, it is so much easier to stay with the organization. But an organization that has leaders that will challenge you, that will help you accelerate your career, that will help you move into another department if you choose to do that, that will want you to stay within the organization and help you be the best employee for that organization as you can be, that's a great place and a place that you want to work. We all want to feel that we are adding value, that what we're doing is of worth. If you don't feel that in your organization, and if you don't feel that you belong in the organization, then you're going to move on, whether you are, and maybe that's the right thing for you to do if you don't feel that you belong. But what can an organization do? Have career plans, have training that's available to the individuals who want it. Some people may not want, some people may be really happy where they're at, and that is okay. Not everybody wants to be the next big leader. Some people want to be individual contributors, and that's okay. But recognize that and work with the individuals and make sure that they are being accelerated in whatever area they wish to be accelerated. And know that everyone's an individual, so you need to treat them as individuals, not as a cohort, not, oh, this is my service desk, this is what I'll do with my service desk. Is that every individual person on that service desk may have different dreams and aspirations. And as a leader, know that, know what that is. Talk to the individuals about it. I used to hate the most losing somebody to another business, because it would be that IP that's walking out the door. And that was the worst for me. I would rather have somebody say, hey, MB, I want to move over and do marketing. And I would be like, oh, go for it. That's awesome. Because at least they would take the IT understanding with them. And then their IT understanding into that marketing space would just enrich the marketing space so much and make the IT job so much easier. And those are the things that I don't think a lot of leaders consider, is that if you have a particular individual that goes into another department, think of the richness that you'll bring to that other department about your department. It makes the conversations easier. And in the 10X generation state, it's all about that sort of visibility. It's about those different, that cohesion, working across the organization, not working in your silos.
Yeah, I really like that. And I talk about it a lot with my clients about mobilizing your workforce and identifying that, like you just said then, everyone's got their own IP. And if someone's worked for your business for over a year, they've got all of that knowledge. So if the worst thing you can do is, like you say, let it walk out the door. And all it can be is just like a little touch point, say, hey, how are you going? And how are you finding this department and this role? And that's how you get the answers. And that's how you discover, oh, this person's actually not quite happy. Maybe I could open up something else for them. But definitely there's so much missed opportunities and so much money wasted in businesses by not mobilizing the workforce and upskilling your current employees. It's so important. And I think that if business did more of that, they wouldn't lose top talent, because top talent is always looking to grow and evolve. So, Mary Beth, I'm really excited to continue following your journey. You've, like I said, someone that has inspired me personally. You're always looking to grow, always looking to evolve, always upskilling yourself. So when this, you know, obviously your new book's coming out soon, but what do you think the next 12 months will look like? Like if we sit down again in the next 12 months and we're doing another podcast together, what would you have loved to have achieved, moved the needle on, coached on? What's the next sort of 12 months looking like for you?
I would love for people to have read my book and to have actually, and to come to me and say, hey, we started to implement some of the things, some of the tools that you've got in the book, and we're really seeing a difference. And we're really starting to see what the 10X generation state looks like. I'm so passionate about it. And can I show you the cover of?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if people see this there, but there it is.
Very nice. For those watching, we've got YouTube as well. So if you watch this on YouTube, you'll be able to see the cover.
We are already at bestseller status. I've already sold a massive cohort, and we're in the UK doing some speaking for the book in the middle of the year. But I would love for people to come up to me and say, hey, 10X Generation has changed my life and changed my world. And for the next 12 months, that's what I'm focusing on. Just really promoting the book and getting the book out there. Work-wise, I don't know. The sky's the limit, really. It's just where I'm of the opinion, where can I add the most value? And so wherever I'm at and whatever I'm doing, if I'm adding value, then that is what it is that I'm after and what I'm looking for. So so will I be with Vic ICT? Probably, but who knows? We just don't know. I don't know what the future holds in that regard, but I do know that organizations need to shake things up, that their people are worth more than just shoving them in a silo and expecting the same sort of outcomes, running them through the same digital transformation over and over again, and spending millions of dollars on that and never achieving the outcomes that they wanted. I think that we as leaders need to do something different, right? Keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting the same a different outcome, I think, is madness, right? Isn't that madness? That's that saying. So do something different. Have the courage. I do. I'm always curious about new things, which is why I wrote a book about it. Is that thought leadership? Sure, because I think that there has to be a better way. And the way that we're operating now cannot be the way of the future. Have to do something different. Have to shake things up.
I completely agree. Mary Beth, amazing having you on. And I look forward to speaking with you again, maybe in 12 months, maybe in 18 months. We'll see what the future holds. But huge congratulations on the book. And I know it will be a great success. So congratulations again.
Thank you so much, Georgie, and thank you to your listeners.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.
Thank you.